Roy Massey, a life in football and a coach to the stars. In this compelling memoir, Roy tells the fascinating story of his 50 years in football as a player, coach and scout, including a long spell at Arsenal during the Wenger glory years. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from the UK, author of A Life in Football and Coach to the Stars, Roy Massey. Roy, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Doesn't 50 years go quickly when you're having fun?
I blink and it's gone by. Yeah, no doubt about that. When I look back to 50 years when I started playing as a professional footballer in 1965 with Rotherham United, and to be here talking to you, well, it shot by, but it's a pleasure to speak to you anyway.
So when did you first discover that you were quite good at kicking a ball around and go professional at the mighty Rotherham?
Well, I suppose like most youngsters, we didn't have the opportunity as youngsters have today at 8 or 9 years of age, who can be training at a top professional club in the academies. There was none of that in the 50s, but we used to play football in the streets, we used to play in the playground. I had a knack of dribbling past opponents, you know, at that age. And then you start getting in the primary district teams, and playing from there. Then obviously at school level, you continue to play for your school team. The more you play, and of course, if you love football, you practice at weekends, kicking a ball with your mates on the local playing fields, and gradually develop your skills so that eventually I was playing at 16 for my school team and Yorkshire Grammar Schools, and then played with England Grammar Schools, and then went on from there, basically.
And so from there you went to a team which I always thought when I was a kid sounded incredibly exotic, Leighton Orient. I had this idea that there were sort of Saipans and it was, you know, had that Eastern influence to it.
Well, that's right. I mean, I started, first of all, when I got to 18, I could have signed for my local clubs in South Yorkshire. I was born in a place called Mexborough, a little town in South Yorkshire, and I could have, leaving school, gone to play with Barnsley, Sheffield Wednesday, Sheffield United, but decided through my school PE teacher to go to college to get some qualifications before becoming a footballer. So I studied PE at St Paul's College in Cheltenham, and in my first 2 years, I was on trial at Arsenal, so I used to go down at weekends to play for Arsenal with their A team and reserves. But then Billy Wright, who was a manager at the time, he wanted me to sign. I'd got one more year left of my college course, but he said I might be too old to carry on playing to make the grade if I hadn't signed at the time when I was 20. So I declined the Arsenal offer and stayed at college, got my qualifications, and then signed for Rotherham United, which was my local club. And from there, it was disastrous as far as my playing career was concerned, because we had a new manager came in, a guy called Jack Mansell, and he'd come from Holland, and he'd arranged a pre-season tour in Holland. And my first game in Holland as a professional footballer, I'd already scored 2 goals in the centre-half, came across and lunged in a late tackle, hit me on the knee, and my knee ligaments and cartilage were smashed. So I was out of the game for the whole season, to be fair, and continued playing for 4 or 5 more years with a knee injury, which wasn't really capable of competing with professional football. But when new manager came to Rotherham, I was in the bath one day after a reserve game, and he came in and said, "Roy, the Orient want to speak to you." And I'm thinking, well, the Orient, where's that? Is that in the east of the world somewhere? But I've suddenly realised, somebody told me, that's Leighton Orient. I didn't even know where Leighton was, but eventually I found out and travelled by train the next day, met the manager, Dick Graham, and I signed 2 days later for Leighton Orient. So I had 2 really good years at Leighton Orient.
It's a career, though, isn't it, that is, I don't think people kind of realise how precarious a professional sports career is. And just a split second, you know, you mentioned, you know, the getting your knee shattered and what that did. And again, it always haunts professional sports because literally in a split second, your whole career can be over. I mean, I know that you'd studied PE and everything, but especially with young players, it can be over before they finish and they've got nothing to fall back on.
that is a big problem for any youngster that wants to be a professional footballer. But fortunately, with the advent of academy football, when players get to 16 and then they sign as professional footballers from 16 to 18, they do their traineeship, obviously playing and developing their football skills in the day, but also they spend time in the classroom, so they've got an ability to take two or three A-levels in the 2 years that they've got their scholarship. So wise players, wise youngsters, and hopefully they are encouraged by any agents they've got or parents to continue their studies, because, as you say, it's a very difficult time for a player that gets injured early on in his career. And even players of today, when they get to 33, 34, what do they do then for the next 30 years if they haven't thought about what's going to happen to me, you know, when I finish my career? They're not all Premier League players on £100,000 a week. So most players, you know, are earning an average wage, and they've got to think of their future when they've finished playing. But I know with injuries, I know three or four very, very talented lads when I was at Arsenal who looked to have terrific careers, and their careers were found, you know, were disrupted through injuries, and they've had to pack up at an early age.
It's always
so it's very sad for those players.
Indeed, and then they have to work out what they're going to do. But going back to what happened with you, you have this unique talent, which was basically being able to scout and to spot young players. Now, if I go on to and watch some of my friends' kids playing football, something like that, unless there's like a 9 year old being going complete Cristiano Ronaldo, I can't work out who's a good player, who's a bad player. They just seem to be kicking things around. But obviously, you have your specialist subject, as it were, was able to spot young kids who were doing the right thing at the right time and thinking, yeah, this one's got perhaps a bit, could be, you could start the becoming a professional player.
Well, when Howard Wilkinson set up the academies in 1998, it was a case of looking at 8-year-olds. Before then, we could only take on players at 14 and 15 years of age, sign them on schoolboy forms when they got to 14. When the academy football came in, then it was a different ball game altogether, because we've now got to look at lads at 8 years of age, and that's entirely different to looking at a young talent at 14. So it was obviously far more difficult. And when I started, Liam Brady phoned me up to say, would I come over to Arsenal and work for the academy and work with the 9s to 12-year-olds, then, yes, it was entirely different for our scouts to have a look for talented players. And, in fact, my first year, I'm thinking, I started at Arsenal in March 98, and the season starting the following September, the academy football. So we've got 3 months to assemble a group of 8-year-olds to play for the Arsenal Academy. And my idea was to call in the scouts, and I asked them to give me the telephone numbers of the best teams in their areas. And I phoned the managers and asked them to send their best two players of under eights up to our training ground, where we had a weekend coaching. And the idea would be for us to select the best players. And the standard wasn't great. And then I'm looking through the names of the boys and the names of the team managers, the local team managers, and most of them were the surname of the team managers. So it was the team managers who were sending their own boys up to the trials.
Yeah.
Our first year of academy football was a bit disastrous, but we did get on better from then on.
Became
more organised.
Do you think that Howard Wilkinson doesn't get the respect that he's due for what he did in terms of bringing an academy? Because now everybody's got an academy, but he really was ahead of his time, wasn't he?
Howard Wilkinson was a very studious young man. I played with him for Yorkshire Grammar Schools and England Grammar Schools, and came across him when he played for Brighton, and I was playing for the Orient in Colchester, so I knew him very well. And we were on friendly terms, and I've seen him over the years. And he's had an unbelievable career, steering Leeds United to winning the league championship just before the academy started. and then to set up the academies, he was the right person to set the academy football and put it in motion.
So when did it start to sort of click then at Arsenal with, you know, with the youngsters and just, you know, to start developing talent?
Well, Arsenal have always had a history of developing players. When there was no academies and there was just ordinary training and no schools of excellences, back in the 60s, when I came on trial to Arsenal as a college boy, I played my debut in the A team, and six, maybe seven of those players who were now 16, 17, 18 years of age, moved into the first team a few years later. And people like Peter Simpson, Peter Storey, John Samuels, George Armstrong, all these players were youngsters at Arsenal at 15 years of age and then had distinguished careers with the first team. So, you know, over the years, Arsenal have had a great history, and it's continued today, fortunately. And it's pleasing to see that the youth team of today are in the FA Youth Cup final.
And it's interesting that Liam Brady called you, because, I mean, Arsenal has traditionally also had a history of, was, you know, looking across the Irish Sea to nurture talent, hasn't it?
Well, obviously, scouts were, when I joined the club, obviously, with Liam Brady, they would have had a scout in Ireland looking for players, and he obviously sent Liam over as a 15-year-old, and he was a terrific player with Arsenal, and his career has been fantastic, playing abroad as well. But he really saved my career, because he'd been appointed about a year before the academy started in charge of the academy, and I was working for Norwich City at the time, and when I was taking young boys from the London area up to Norwich, which was a 2-hour journey, because my colleague and boss Gordon Bennett, and that is his real name, he was ahead of his time, and he said to me, "Roy, go around the London, North London area, and see if you can spot the 12-year-olds before the London clubs do," because in those days they were started looking at 14 years of age. And so I used to take these lads up to London by minibus up to Norwich, and they do training for the holidays and what have you. And then one day I'm on the settee reading the new rules for the new academy, and I was aghast to read that players could only sign for a club at the academy level if they live within 1 hour of journey to that club. And of course, I'm taking boys 2 hours up to Norwich, so I'm thinking, my job's finished. I can't work for Norwich under these terms. And Liam Brady, within 3 days, fortunately, he saved me, he rang me and said, "Roy, I'm looking for somebody to run our 9s to 12s in our academies. Would you like to join us?" And of course, yeah, that was a fantastic opportunity for me, and I was there for 15 years, and 15 wonderful years at the Arsenal.
And of course, you were there during the Wenger years as well, during the Wenger years,
oh,
which is, you know.
I think Arsene Wenger came a couple of years before I went to Arsenal, and he was unbelievable. I mean, the success he had, and the joy for me of just sitting in the stand watching the Thierry Henrys and the Tony Adams of this world, you know, and the Ray Parlers, and obviously Tony Adams and Ray Parler came through the youth team at Arsenal, and Cesc Fabregas, obviously, who came as a 16-year-old. What a fantastic contribution he made to the Arsenal success story.
Which begs the question, Adams and Parler, because when they were grown up, if they ever did get grown up, I've got so much respect for Tony Adams after what he's been through. But
definitely,
you know, I mean, really, really, really. But what were they like as, I mean, were they fully formed at the age of 8? I can't really imagine sort of Tony Adams as a child, or, you know, or Parler, because they were, shall we say, committed players, to put it mildly.
They were very committed, and obviously they would have been committed. I don't think you take that away from somebody. It's either there or it's not, that commitment and competitiveness. Physically, I would have thought, I don't know, but Tony Adams, I would think, throughout his career would have been, and growing up, a reasonable size. And, I mean, he was such a fantastic centre half. I never saw a centre forward get the better of him, to be fair. But they had wonderful careers at Arsenal, and credit to the scout who brought them in. It was a magnificent gesture for him, because those players have given great service to Arsenal.
And of course, there was that. It was that period, wasn't it, where we had these titanic battles with Manchester United and two really strong and two legendary managers, Arsene Wenger, and of course Sir Alex Ferguson.
Yes. There was great battles, but it's good to see them arm in arm in the papers, you know, and they're now good friends.
And this is the thing with Wenger, because I mean, in a world we seem to be where managers are going through the revolving doors quicker than you can say who's next. Yeah. They were there for a long time. They were thoroughly professional, and yet they knew that when the game was over, I mean, Ferguson is famous for his glasses of wine after with his opposition managers. Yeah. But there was that respect. And Wenger was A, professional, bought something immeasurable to Arsenal and the whole Premier League, and B, was a thoroughly decent guy.
Well, without a doubt, but he's very intelligent, Arsene Wenger, and not just on the football pitch, but he'd obviously got great imagination for football and developing footballers. And I know that the players who were at the Arsenal first team when he first arrived were a bit vexed when he got rid of the Coca-Cola machine, you know, and he put water on the dining table. So he made all these sort of rules, which maybe to start with the players didn't accept, but once they started having success on the football pitch, then everything that Arsene Wenger said, they took notice of.
And tell me a little bit, if you can, about Henry, because I was in the UK at that time. I was living in London in the 90s, and I will always remember a couple of bits and pieces. I am not an Arsenal fan. My team is another team.
Oh, that's a shame.
Another team.
Who do you support?
Chelsea. So therefore, you know,
we're going faint on the phone.
Exactly. Strange that. Hey. Anyway, so.
Oh God, I can hear you. Sorry, I didn't miss that. Who do you support?
Moving swiftly onwards. Right. We'll always remember. Yeah, I'm South West London, if you down the King's Road, if that makes any sense to you. Anyway, so moving swiftly onwards, I will always remember Thierry Henry, again, a guy who had a tremendous impact on English football, as well as the Vavavoom commercials, because he was more than a football player. And you know, they talk about big game players and players who can change games and the whole thing, but Henry was a force of nature.
He was a force of nature, and he got terrific ability to score goals, although I think when he first came he was a winger, and then Arsene Wenger converted him into the middle to play centre-forward, and some of the goals he scored were unbelievable, really. And what a lovely man off the pitch as well. And I can remember I remember seeing a young man who is now at Chelsea called Reece James, who was with England as well. I knew his dad, and he got a son there who was 8 years of age, and I liked him as a player. He lived in South London, and I asked Reece and dad if he'd like to come up and meet Arsene Wenger one Saturday morning, because I knew that we'd had to work hard to get Reece to sign for Arsenal, because he was right next to Chelsea's training ground, more or less. Didn't have that travelling all through London. So I took him up one Saturday to meet the players, and Thierry Henry came over, and he was brilliant with young Reece at 8 years of age. We took them out to watch a training session, and when we came back, Dad really was grateful, and I thought, oh, we've got that in the bag, I think we'll sign Reece. But unfortunately, the following Monday, I had a phone call from his dad to say, Roy, we'd love to sign for Arsenal, but Chelsea's only just down the road, and the thought of travelling up three times a week through London from south to north London would be quite horrendous. So we lost a player there. But what I'm saying, we're going back to Thierry Henry, who was brilliant at that time with players, you know, out of football, and young lads who idolized him, basically. And he was a great man.
And I always remember when he went to New York, you know, he'd left us, he went to New York, and then he came back. And he scored that goal. I mean, you know, like I said, I'm not an Arsenal fan, but that moment was absolute fairy tale stuff.
Fairy tale. Well, some players do have fairy tale lifestyles, don't they? You know, there's the opposite end of the coin that players, most of them struggle and don't get the breaks, but the players that do at the top, it's marvellous to see, to be fair.
Can it be difficult dealing? You mentioned Reece James's dad, and it sounds like he was quite reasonable. There's an awful lot of pressure, even like, you know, it filters down, and now even at the, you know, young age, they're being pushed and pulled. You know, can parents be a problem, or have you learned to be diplomatic over the years?
Well, parents. There's different types of parents, and there's two sets of parents. And there's a parent that just wants his boy, thinks, and what a privilege to play for Arsenal's academy. And let him play because that's for enjoyment at this moment in time when he's 8 or 9, 10. Then there's the other player parent that thinks he's got a superstar on his hands. And particularly if he's a goal scorer and he's the top player in the under-9s, under-10 side, then it can go to parents' heads. The dream starts in that, oh, he's going to be a superstar one day, and that's a little bit dangerous. And I always, when we had our parents' meeting, used to say to parents, look, it doesn't matter if you've got the best under-9 player in London. If you've got the best under-20 player in London, then maybe you've got a player on your hands. And some parents took notice, but other parents, you know, they can't see it because everything is good about their youngster. And who can blame them? It's must be marvellous for a parent whose lad comes through the system and then he gets in the first team. And I was speaking to Alex Iwobi's dad a few weeks ago, and he was recalling the first time that Alex made his debut for Arsenal in front of 60,000 people at the Emirates Stadium. And he was saying, right, I was so nervous, you know. I mean, he was a lovely dad looking after the lad and never put him under pressure, but what a magical moment for him to see his boy after taking him around since he's eight years of age, like all parents do, and supporting them along the way. And it's a great privilege for the parent to see the lad come out on the first team pitch, and what a thrill it is for them.
Do you think now, in an age of social media, and players are always in the spotlight, and they're being, if they're doing well, they are lauded to the rafters, but if they're doing badly, you know, they are under extreme pressure because they're on X amount of salaries, which is much more than most of the West End can afford. And they may find themselves a long way from home on their own, surrounded by all sorts of temptations. And I think we'll leave that one there. Do you think it's harder now? The pressures are harder than perhaps they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
Oh, I definitely think it's harder pressure. I think it's more difficult to play at the top level now. It's quicker, it's more skillful, and very difficult. So a player has to have extreme talent and confidence in himself to continue playing on a regular basis at the top level. But there is also a pressure on the players, and the money they can be earning or can earn in the future. But one hopes that these days they've got good advisors, and they've got people around them who can look after them and nurture them and help them when they're going through difficult times. And, you know, I think clubs even have psychologists there at the clubs now, you know, to look for any problems that a player might have outside football in his own personal life, and they're there to help them. So I think players do get lots of support at these professional clubs these days.
So why the book, Roy? Why you decided to put this all down?
Sorry, why did I?
Yeah.
Well, I hadn't thought of it until I met a guy called Mark Metcalf, who's written a few autobiographies of footballers. And when I was talking to him about the book he's writing about Sheffield Wednesdays, and a guy called Fred Spikesley, who played for Sheffield Wednesdays in 1896 Cup Final, and he scored the two goals that won the final against Wolverhampton Wanderers at Crystal Palace. And my granddad was a professional footballer. He was a goalkeeper for Sheffield Wednesdays in that Cup Final. Granddad played in the game, Mark rang me to ask if I got any thoughts about him playing in these games with his friend Fred Spikesley. And so we got together And then he asked me if I'd thought of writing a book, and really I hadn't, but I'd retired, and I was writing a few things down for my grandchildren, really, from my life story. And he said, would I send it up to him? And he thought that there was room for a book. And so we got together, and over the last 3 years, we've been together sorting it out, and now we've got the finished product, and I'm really proud of it. It really is a fantastic book and some terrific stories, both me as a footballer. Yeah, sad times and good times, as everybody is in everybody's life. And I've got it written here and published by the publishing company, Pitch Services, Publishers. And it's really a good read, I think, personally. I'm biased.
Indeed. If you have to pick out one out of an illustrious career, one moment that always makes you smile, what would it be, Roy?
The one moment? Well, there's more than one or two, but I'm not going to carry on and bore you. But I do remember being at Colchester United and playing in the League Cup against Reading, and we drew 1-1 at home, and I scored the equaliser. I'd only just joined Colchester United at the time, and then Reading were in a division higher than us, and we went over to Reading's ground in the replay, and I scored a hat-trick. So that was a highlight, and that start of my career at Colchester, which I was trying to get over this knee injury, I'd scored 13 goals by the end of September, and I was all the league's leading goal scorer, and thought, wow, my career's going to take off again. But it took off in the wrong direction because I broke a bone in my foot the following week. So I was out injured again. So it's a story of injuries, but also the youth team players. My first group of boys that we signed from our coaching sessions and the scouts that brought in these players when I first joined Arsenal as 9-year-olds, we went through and we got a fantastic team there, and we went through virtually unbeaten up to 18 years of age, and then they won the FA Youth Cup final, and that was an absolute brilliant moment for me. And we had Emmanuel Frimpong and Jack Wilshere playing in midfield, and I thought, wow, nobody can beat these players. These two lads are going to be the Arsenal midfield for the next 12 years. But unfortunately, Emmanuel, when he got in the first team, received a knee injury like myself, and his career was cut short. And of course, we know that Jack, absolutely phenomenal player, and could have gone on to even better things, although he did play for England, but he had also his injuries, and his career was cut short. But I'm delighted to say that he's now involved in coaching, and he's working at the Arsenal. He's back at his home, really.
The book is called Roy Massey, A Life in Football, A Coach to the Stars. It's by Roy who's been today. Roy, thank you so much for your time today.
Pleasure to speak to you, Giles, and I wish you all the best and have a good day.